Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And if we have further technical difficulties, two things. Number one, it's all my fault. And number two, we'll be back in about 60 seconds. So we're going to do the best we can. My name is Mark Salem. For the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car and car repair and questions you have, new cars, old cars. What should I pay for this repair? We can get kind of close, but we can't be perfect. Sitting next to me is my son, Alan Salem. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Been busy last week?
Yeah. Been not as busy as we'd like to be, but we've got plenty of stuff going on.
Okay. Alan handles the performance side and the diesel side of our business, and you do just about everything?
Pretty much. I tell people, we don't do paint and body, and we don't do internal transmission. That's about it.
That's about it. So just let's cover a couple of trucks you had this week. Now, you had a Dodge Cummins that was brought in.
Yeah, 02 Cummins.
No start. 5.9?
5.9.
Okay.
24 valve.
Cranks over but does catch.
Correct.
Okay, go.
Found it had no fuel pressure. And found the fuel pump fuse had blown, and there was a big wire mess under the hood. Cleaned up all the, put a new relay in the pump, put a new fuse in the pump, rewired the whole thing, and it came up and was working. But at that point it had low fuel pressure, about 5 pounds, and, which minimum it should ever be is 10. On that particular vehicle, and
but it'll idle it run because idle at 5 pounds, half of what it really needs, because that's the lead load it's going to have is idling.
Right.
He's not driving down the road, going to Flagstaff, pulling the trailer. Otherwise, that's kind of a loaded situation.
Right.
So it'll still start and run.
Yeah, and what it'll actually probably run good, but what it does is it ends up starting that VP44 high pressure fuel pump, and that's where the repair gets extraordinarily expensive.
Okay, so this low-pressure pump in the tank or on the rail?
No, it was in the tank.
In the tank. So the low-pressure pump simply provides fuel to the high-pressure pump.
Correct.
The high-pressure pump then compresses that fuel to approximately what kind of PSI?
Anywhere between probably 5,000 up to 28,000.
Okay, PSI. So that's enough to pop all the every hose in your car possible.
Oh, yeah.
So then the high-pressure pump is going to feed and fuel to each injector, but the computer is going to open and close the injector as needed.
Right.
So we've got 5 to 28,000 PSI waiting, and we're going to use this electronic, and it's a very small connection. It's a small coil, and all we're going to do is open and close the nozzle in milliseconds, in millionths of a second.
Right.
So tell me what it sounds like when you're idling.
What do you mean?
Kind of like this. Psst, psst,
psst, psst. Right.
All right. Now, when you're driving your Cummins normally, I envision that it sounds like this.
Yeah, almost constant. Yeah.
That's kind of a wide open throttle kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So that one goes out the door. You had a black Jeep in there. I was looking at some of the security camera footage the other day, and there was a black Jeep on the motorhome rack. What was that all about? You had the front end off that one.
No, it's tan, but that's okay. What threw me off. But we're doing that. It was one of the ones that we took to Rubicon. So we're going back through that thing and just cleaning up and fixing some stuff that was broken and that didn't work right. We're also putting a turbocharger on it.
What motors it got in?
Just a little 4-liter V6, inline six.
Okay. So you're going to put a turbo on an inline six?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to, what kind of boost can you run without studding the head or putting
I don't know yet, but it should be set around 6 pounds, I would imagine.
Okay. So, and that's what we did in the Camaro, and that's what we did on a lot of others. We set them between 4 and 6 on the boost side so that we didn't pop the head gaskets.
Right.
So, alrighty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by, write down Dennis for me.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Okay. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair. Brian and Thelma have been in Mesa. Their family has been in Mesa servicing cars since 1970. I personally know Brian and Thelma, and I can tell you they're really good people. I've had conversations with Brian as we lean on one another to fix cars and stuff like that. He's a really nice guy, and his wife, Thelma, is a very nice lady. So they can provide you all kinds of automotive services, from oil changes all the way to taking your transmission in. And they do air conditioning as well. So if you're in Mesa, the only shop I recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located on Main Street just east of Stapley. Dennis, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Hey, Mark, I'm calling for a friend of mine who apparently doesn't know how to use a telephone.
You know, I know the background you came from, and that's a commonality with your friends.
Yeah, you got it. Hey, he's got a 2000 Chevy half-ton pickup, and takes very good care of it. It's clean as a whistle. He took it into a car wash a couple days ago, one of those that you stay in the car and ride through, and high pressure, all that kind of stuff. And when he came out of the car wash, he had a light ABS, and he drove it home, and then the next day he turned it out. You know, he started it up again, and the light was off. Is it something he should worry about?
No, more than likely he paid an extra couple of bucks to have his undercarriage washed. And there's each one of the wheels. Now, you can have a two-channel ABS, which is typically just the two front tires. You can have a three-channel ABS, which is both fronts, plus one sensor in the differential. And you can have a four-sensor ABS system, or a four-channel ABS system, that has one sensor at each wheel. It's kind of an evolution. We started out with two wheels and then three sensors, and now we're at four. So underneath there's these sensors that sometimes when they're wet, they'll set an ABS light. However, once you start driving the car, and now all of a sudden we're creating lots of air turbulence on the backside of the tires and the wheels. So the tires and wheels are spinning real fast. The brake rotors are spinning real fast. We're creating a lot of turbulence, and that drives off the sensor. So the end result is if they're, when he turns the car on, he should see, before he starts, he just turns the key on, he should see the ABS light come on and go off after 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Then he starts the car, and as long as it's gone, there's no harm, no foul. Nothing happened bad. He'll be just fine. Now, how much are we going to charge him for this? Because he's chicken and he doesn't want to talk on the phone.
I don't know. You name it.
All right. Tell him it's $8.50, and and you collect for me, okay?
I'll do that.
All righty, Dennis. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much. All righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're not used to charging you, but I know Dennis. I've known Dennis since 19. I'm going to recognize his voice since 1973. So you don't know it, but he's a policeman. Don't tell him.
I haven't heard of him before.
Yeah. They called him the Bork, and he was a good guy. He was always good to me, and he was a good policeman. And he's retired, like many of those guys are. But anyway, ABS light on. I'm gonna log that down. 602-508-0960. Okay, I'm gonna ask you the new Freon. Do you remember what it's called?
Isn't it R1234Y?
Okay, it's 1234YF.
YF.
Now, a lot of people are calling it the 1234, and a lot of people are calling it YF. Okay?
I think I've heard it referred to as YF, yes.
Okay, so the easy part is, because the rest of them is R12, that's the old stuff, then R134 is the last 10 years, maybe more than that, then now we have this 1234. So 134, and then we add a 2 in there, 1234, but it's called YF. We're going to call it YF. Okay, so the question to you is, the old refrigerants, before this brand new one that we've got now, the old refrigerants, how long did they last in the atmosphere?
I actually think I know the answer to this question. Okay. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was either 25 or 50 years.
130 years.
Okay, so then 134 has got to be 25 or 50.
No, that is 134 and 12. This is the refrigerants draw the line between everything back to the 50s and from the beginning of this year forward.
Okay.
So that's the old and that's the new.
Okay.
So the old one's 130, 130 years. And guess what the new YF, how long it lasts. Now, this is a new environmentally friendly, environmentally sensitive, and slightly flammable.
Yeah. slightly I would say 5 years.
Okay. How about 4 days?
Really?
4 days. Well, now, that doesn't mean that we can let Freon fly.
Right,
that's
right,
a bad idea. And we haven't done that since, I would say, since the mid-70s. The mid-70s, it was no big deal. If you had to evacuate the system, we didn't have machines that would suck the Freon out, clean it up, and put it back in. We never had that. But there was nothing to do. If you had to break a line to take the water pump off, or you had to break a line, you just let it fly. And it went into the atmosphere, and that's all there was to it. There was nothing you could do about it. And the systems back then, it wasn't uncommon to have a 3-pound system that you added a pound and a half to at the beginning of every summer. So
right.
Leaks were pretty predominant. Back then, we didn't have the dye. So we had these old things called sniffers.
Mm-hmm.
And you would take this little thing and rub it around every single fitting. Here's the kicker. When you put the when you had the sniffer just in the air, it would go beep, 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 and when you found a Freon leak, it would go beep, 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 beep.
Right.
But if you put it against your mouth, about an inch away from your mouth, and you blew in it, it would say, there's Freon. Now, I don't know how that happens, and I'm not a scientist.
It's got to be the same chemical. Whatever chemical it's sniffing for in Freon, we have to expel from our body, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. But what's really weird is you know, when we do the heater core, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The heater core is the hot water radiator underneath the passenger side dashboard.
Right.
Right next to it is the evaporator, which is the cold portion of your air conditioner.
Right.
So if you want to check the evaporator, the idea was is we would take the sniffer
mm-hmm.
and stick it in the vent all the way to the right in the passenger side.
Okay.
So every single time, based on what I just told you, every single time you turned the fan on. Now, we were thinking that in the box, Freon would leak. So when you turn the fan on, the Freon would come out of the vents.
Right.
So you'd stick your sniffer in that far right vent. Virtually every time you stuck your sniffer in the vent, it gave you an audible alarm that Freon was there. But the problem is if you put it next to your mouth, and it was the air coming out of the vents that was causing it, the air flow was causing it. It didn't like you blowing air into it.
Oh, I got
it. It liked for it to just inhale the air. So it's
gotcha.
The difference between sucking and blowing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a strange thing, and I know that back then the evaporators underneath the dash were a big job, and
right.
we oftentimes would take we wouldn't do those, and we'd say let's fill it up with Freon and let's see how long it lasts and let's decide that, because it just wasn't something that you want to dig into. Today we have labor hours for some of the evaporators underneath some of the cars that are in the $1,400 to $1,800 range
mm-hmm.
in labor alone. No parts, no Freon.
Our trucks are perfect examples of those.
Yeah, our Dodges.
Our Dodges, yeah.
So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mark and Alan Salem sitting here. We're at your service. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you have a car question, the lines are wide open. You have a 1 in 5 chance of getting in. Actually, you've got a 100% chance of getting in because all the lines are open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by another shop that I recommend because these are really the best. IMM Auto Service is in the northeast corner of Tempe. It's just south of the 202, just south of the 202, just west of the 101. So he's in the ASU, northeast area. Nevertheless, IMM is important, and here's why. David's been open since 1972, and he works on some cars that the rest of us don't really like to work on. So if you have a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, everybody can do tire rotations, and everybody can do oil changes. But when your Volvo changes the radio station every time you open the door, or your Fiat will not start and run when the temperature's between 63 and 68, then that's what you need David for. He's been there. He's done that. Now, if you have a Chevrolet, Honda, Toyota, Chrysler in your garage, he can handle those as well, but he specializes in Volvo, Saab, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos. So he's got ASE Master Techs, and that's an important consideration. So if you live in anywhere in the East Valley and you've got one of those cars that scares us, then David at IMM Auto Service is the place you should go. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you some questions here, just kind of test you. When a car cranks, folks a lot of times in the email traffic is people that have a car that doesn't and they'll say to me, it doesn't start.
Right.
So what does that tell you? What do you say?
Tells me that I've got about 8 more questions.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Because does not start doesn't tell us anything. We need to know two things. It doesn't crank over or it doesn't catch and run.
Right.
So those are the two kinds of considerations. So ironically enough, the does not start comes from most men, and women will simply tell you the symptoms. They'll say, I turn my key and nothing happens. So it's ironic that that happens, but that's been, you know, I have that experience since 1988 to now in radio, so that's what typically happens. So when you have a car that cranks over but doesn't catch, you'll agree that it's spark or fuel.
Right.
And it doesn't take long to determine that.
Nope.
So for us, and I think it's really for everybody that knows their stuff, if we spray some carb cleaner or propane inside the intake manifold of a gas or diesel car, we're likely going to get it to pop.
Right.
And we're going to have the opportunity to know that we have spark, but we're missing fuel.
Right.
So at that particular point, we start looking at the fuel side. On the other hand, if you have a gasoline engine and you spray some carb cleaner down the throat of the intake manifold and you crank it over and nothing happens, then you pull a spark plug wire, you stick a screwdriver in the end of it, you hold it close, and usually you get the junior technician to hold that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you say,
hold this metal part.
Put your hand on the fender and touch this screwdriver for me and let me know what happens. So then you get in the car, and what is it so that they have a flavor? What do you see?
You see stars.
No. From the point of the technician,
technician, it looks like he got tasered.
It's kind of like when your lawnmower doesn't run, you need to know if there's sparks. So you call the young neighborhood kid over and you stick a spark plug or a screwdriver in the wire and you say, hey, just hang on to this and hold this handle here and let me know. So you don't pull it hard, but you just pull it a little bit. And he just lets go real fast. Well, then you know you have spark.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it works. All right, let's go to the phone calls. Who've we got?
Chris.
Chris, good morning to you. How can I help you?
For your opinion, I guess. I'm looking for a around-the-house work truck, and I like a Tacoma, but the used Tacomas are hard to come by. Do you have an opinion on just an older model truck to find reliable?
Well, I would think the older model, are you talking about the small kind of trucks or the full-size half-ton trucks?
Well, I mean, I prefer some clearance, but I wouldn't mind a Ford Ranger or a small Tacoma, but I'd prefer a little more clearance.
Okay.
I looked at a Ford F-150, older model Ford F-150 with the early 2000s, Ford Rangers and Tacomas.
Okay. All right. Well, all of those, I think in order to get clearance, you're going to have to step up from the smaller truck to the bigger
truck. Sure.
To the F-150 kind of stuff. I think you're going to have to step into that. There's lots of Chevrolets out there that I would certainly stick with the V8 models.
Okay.
You're gonna have a little bit more power and performance with that than the small V6s or the four cylinders or what. But if you're after fuel economy, then you'd be looking for a four cylinder and a five speed, and that would be a perfect combination. Have you tried Craigslist and some of those other places?
I have, and those three trucks. I mean, within an hour, those things are gone very quickly.
Yeah.
If it were me, I would buy a Tacoma.
Okay, but they want an arm and a leg for the Tacoma.
Oh no, I know they do. Trust me, they absolutely do, but I don't know.
Well, and that brings up a kind of a negotiation point. I love to negotiate, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not with respect to our business, but for buying a horse or buying a trailer or buying a quad.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I always negotiate. Chris, you have nothing to lose by the negotiation posture is simply, according to Mark Salem's rule book, is you have to have a plan, and here's my plan. I really like your horse. It's a little bit more than I want to pay for. So I'm going to offer you $6,000, and I know you're asking $8,000, but I'm going to keep looking, and so what I'm going to say is my six is good for the next 3 days, because it'll probably take me that much time to look at some other horses. So if you change your mind in the next 3 days, you know, give me a call, but I'm good. I'm a cash buyer. And
and the only thing you have to lose by doing that is the next 60 trucks.
Yeah. Well, like, for example, this is an example of what's going on the market here. 2002 Tacoma TRD with 180,000 miles for $18,000. I mean, that's the kind of, and it's selling, too, and that's something I'm willing to pay for. You know, I mean, I'll tolerate that high of mileage, I guess, but I'm not willing to pay that much money.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that that's a 12, 14-year-old, 15-year-old truck with 180,000 miles is $18,000?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Gee. You could.
No, trust me. I get that. It's too much money, but yes, that's what they're bringing. I mean, Ray's old truck, I think that thing was like a 2004, and it had, I don't even know, it didn't even have 100 on it, and we did a ton of work to that, and I got mid-20s for that.
That's stupid money.
And you know what? It's easy.
All right. Look, we've got him primed. You and I are going to talk off the air. Don't we have an S10 for sale?
No. That doesn't have any ground clearance.
No, you're right about that. But they're V6s. We have all the maintenance records. They're 4.3. If you can do without the clearance, everything else is fine. What about your little S10?
They're all with two-wheel drive.
They're all. Oh, he didn't say anything about four-wheel drive.
Well, yeah, the ground clearance is about nil.
Okay. All right. All right.
They scrape on Caterpillar.
Chris, I don't have an answer for you. I think you're just going to have to look hard and be one of the first ones on there. I want to tell you something funny, though. Just the other day, I put a little kid's quad on Craigslist. It's a little 90 with an electric start. It's a Honda. We bought it in 2007, and I think all five grandkids were born and raised on that quad.
Yep.
So I cleaned it up, and I put it in Craigslist for $1,000. I had three callers that wanted to buy it over the phone within the first hour. So I've got one guy can look at it Monday morning, one guy's going to, and if he doesn't buy it, then there's a guy coming in Monday afternoon to look at it. So I don't know what's going on, but I want to tell you something. I think that's stupid money. $18,000 for a 180,000 mile truck.
Yep.
They better have clean everything on it. Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And, hey, Gil, we're still sitting here at 21-6, so that's the best news I've had in a long time. But, of course, I probably just made the
jinxed it
really bad. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto, and they're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Why Bob is an important part of our entire machine of the best shops in Phoenix is because he's one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life. So if you're one of those people that has a problem that nobody can fix, then you need to go to Harker's and talk to Bob. So Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. He does everything from oil changes to engine swaps and diagnosis, and there's really not any cars that he's afraid of. The fact of the matter is he has such a fundamental knowledge of how computer cars work and the body computers, the ABS modules, all that kind of stuff. He just has a fundamental knowledge that he just really excels. So, again, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Hey, we're going to talk to Chris real quick. Chris called in about the Toyota trucks, and you and I were talking during the break.
Yeah.
And I think you brought up a good point. Chris needs to move back into the 90s, stay with a fuel-injected Toyota truck, but he's probably going to find what he wants. So between 2000 and south of that, as long as he sticks pretty close to a fuel-injected vehicle.
Right.
Now, the home run would be that it would be the original owner with all the maintenance records and the Carfax is clean. Did I tell you the other day that I went to look at a car for somebody, and they didn't have any maintenance records? They had a big, long story why they had been lost and so forth and so on. And so I did a title search on it and came up with a salvage vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And this car had been sold four times in the last year,
right.
And they were saying that they were the original owners. So there's a lot of that going on right now. And what they're doing is they're buying these wrecked cars from the auto auctions, and then they're putting them in their backyard, fixing them up. And then when you ask for maintenance records, they say, well, I'm from Pittsburgh, and Uncle Henry owned this, and I'm here in town, and I don't know.
Well, and that's going to get much worse now with these two hurricanes between Texas and Louisiana. These next couple years are going to be really bad with that stuff.
Okay, now you know the shop as well as I do, and we're going to go from lots of shops. How hard is it for us to figure out that this is a flood car?
Not hard.
On a 1 to 10 scale?
2 to 3.
Okay. I agree with you. Now, as far as time is concerned, to check the areas that we would otherwise have to gain access
sure.
to,
mm-hmm.
we're still talking an hour or two.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pull a door panel is really the easiest way we found, or pull some, you know, trim back from the trunk, stuff like that.
And one of the other places is underneath the dash. There's nobody that's going to take a fire hose underneath the dash and clean that area.
Right.
So you get a mirror, you get a flashlight, you look underneath the dash, and when you find a half an inch of layer of mud, then it's a flood car.
Yep.
You can also, and here's what happens when the insurance companies total these cars out, they attach a salvage title to it. Almost always they do, at least they do in Arizona. When it goes through Carfax, the insurance companies report that to Carfax. So when you do a Carfax, and I think that that's just one of the very best things you can do when you're buying a car is go through Carfax and then KBB, Kelley Blue Book, punch in all the information about the car you're buying or the car you're selling, and it has this little speedometer thing. So the trade-in value is on the far left. Private party is next. Dealer trade-in is next, and full retail. So they kind of give you the four different prices of this car that you're looking to buy or to sell. Matt, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got a 2013 Dodge Ram Hemi 1500. I'm a 4x4. I've been touring the country with for the last 3 years. At 86,000 miles, I decided, as it follows, 86,000 miles, I decided to step up the game and drop pure synthetic into it. And all of a sudden, I got the Hemi tick. And I mean, like, the top end's going to pop off this thing, it sounds like. Stopped at a dealer. He had about a four-hour wait, and I was just passing through town. And he said, well, we'll just go with semi-synthetic next time, which I have. And it cut it back a little bit, but still the Hemi tick really bad. I'm pushing 94,000 now, and I'm getting ready to take it to the dealer. Is this something I really need to worry about, or is this pretty standard?
You know, I don't think it's an oil problem at all. I know that you've tied it to the kind of oil you have, but I'm an oil expert, and let me just explain to you. Conventional oil is more, you know, Mother Nature than it is man-made. Conventional oil has an oil change interval of between 3 and 5,000 miles. It has detergents. It has viscosity improvers. It has what they call a pour point. It'll pour out of the can at about 30 below zero, and it turns to a tar at about 325 degrees, so remember those two numbers. Semi-synthetic opens up that window. So semi-synthetic is semi-synthetic. It's a blend oil, and it goes to 45 degrees below zero, and it burns up at about 400 degrees. You've seen the Mobil 1 commercial on television where they put oil in a frying pan, and they run it 500 degrees, and it's still... Well, let me tell you something. That commercial's just BS, and I'll tell you why. If your motor gets over 300 degrees, it's toast anyway. We don't care what the oil's going to do.
Okay.
It's toast. And so then full synthetic is pretty much man-made, and the oil change interval starts at 7,500 and goes all the way to 12 to 15,000 miles. So right. The viscosity, and that's the ability of the engine to maintain its flow process. It has nothing to do with the thickness of the oil. It has to do with the flow of the oil, the ability to flow in cold or hot. So that's a viscosity name.
Okay, we need to break, but hold on just till after this break because I have something to add to that.
Okay, this is the soft break.
Oh, okay.
So it's okay. Yeah, the 30s the hard one.
I understand.
All right. So, but thank you for that because Gil's thanking me in my ears for that.
Yeah.
The idea is most of the time when you go to a semi-synthetic or a full synthetic, you're in a 520, 530 range. And if you go to a 1030 conventional or a 2050 conventional and all your problems are gone, then you've gone from a 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 mile oil change to a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change interval. Conventionals are only good for that. So if you wanted to do something, this is what I would do. First thing I do is I'd go get a 1030 conventional oil change. After 1,000 miles, I would pull a sample, go on the internet, and find somebody who will do an oil analysis for you. They'll send you a little bottle, you put your oil in, you send it back to them. So at 1,000 miles, I'd pull an oil sample and I'd send it for analysis. At 2,000 miles, I'd pull an oil sample and send it to analysis. We want to know if there's something coming apart inside that engine. We want to know if there's an abundance of brass, steel, stainless steel, iron. And you see that we need a comparison, so that's why I'm asking for one at 1,000 and one at 2,000. If the aluminum content in the first oil change is 5, and in the second oil change it's 5, I'm not worried about it. But if it's 5 at the first one and 500 at the second one, you got a problem.
Right.
Go ahead.
What's the whole Hemi tick thing? I got online and researched this, and they came up right away with multiple leads as to, went to synthetic, Hemi tick started, so on and so forth. I mean,
okay.
I guess that's my question.
All right, All right. That is your question, and I think the guy sitting next to me is sitting here frothing at the mouth, and he wants to answer it. So I got to take a break, so we'll be back in 3.5 minutes. So you stay right there, Chris. We'll be right back. All righty. Welcome back, everybody. You won't believe the argument that's going on in the studio. But nevertheless, we're going to handle it. Anyway, we got lines open except for two right now. We've got Matt, and then we're going to go to Mike, and you can be next, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, Mr. Hemi guy, we want to recap real quick. Matt has a Hemi, and he's got 180K on this, or 80K, 80,000 miles on it, and he's got a tick that he thinks is related to the engine oil.
Okay.
All right, and so you have experience in this, so why don't you share your wisdom?
I do. So I know exactly what you're talking about, Matt.
Okay.
I've seen this 1,000 times. I've read all about it, and to be 100% truthful with you, we have chased this problem. We have spent money on this problem. We have spent customers' money on this problem. And
oh, that's good. You know,
the answer to your question is no one knows what the heck is causing that issue. I can tell you this. I can tell you we've, you know, rebuilt a couple of them, and it gets quieter, but by maybe 20-25%.
Okay.
It's going to always be there. I can't explain to you why it got worse with the different oils, but I can tell you those things are ultra, ultra sensitive on oil because of the variable valve timing.
Okay.
You absolutely positively have to run what they recommend on that oil cap in that vehicle because of this exact issue, because of the variable valve timing.
Okay.
And the variable valve timing, VVT, I think they call
yep.
it, it's for just everybody. It allows us to open and close the valves in different times and different durations. So
okay.
obviously if you're wide open throttle, we need to open up that intake valve a little longer to give you a little bit more fuel. So
right.
it's something that came out. It wasn't a real success. And to this day, it's not really been a success.
Okay.
It really costs a lot of money for us to take the variable valve timing engines apart from the top.
Because, I mean, this was like...
lots of components, and you know what the...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It was like absolute day and night from when I got that oil change. It was just absolutely instantly. And I almost took it back like, hey, what's going on? I mean, but it was absolutely instantly.
And Alan, what is it calling for? 020 or something?
No, I right off the top of my head, I can't think of what it calls for. I want to say it's like a what does your cap say? Do you know off the top of your head?
No, I don't. I'm sitting on the in my truck on the side of the road.
Yeah.
I don't want to guess at it.
I want to say it's like a 520 semi-synthetic, not too thin, not too thick.
Yeah.
And again, I can't explain to you why it got so much worse. The ones that I've worked on had a lot more miles than what you currently have. I'm talking well over 100, 150. But I got to be honest with you. If I had one of those vehicles, which I never would.
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
He's broke down on the side of the road in your butt.
No, he's not broke down. He pulled over to talk to us.
Oh, okay. All right.
I wouldn't worry about it. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I might run for peace of mind, just run like my dad said, run a couple oil samples just to, you know, get that warm and fuzzy, but I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
I want to touch on oil. I don't think that there's anything other than a synthetic when you start talking about 020 and a 520. I don't think they make a conventional, and I'm not quite sure that they have a blended oil, but when you're in the 020 and that oil cap calls for that, you are best served by a synthetic.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I think in a 520 they make a semi-synthetic. And I think that might be where the question is. I think that truck takes a 520.
Yeah, I believe that's what it is.
But
just follow the cap. And I think the weight's going to dictate which one you get. And I would probably stick with synthetics. But the good news about synthetics is you got a 7,500 to 10,000 miles. Now, Alan, you got synthetic in your diesel.
Yes.
What are you running on total time?
Between 12 and 15,000.
And I am too. And I, ironically enough, the last couple of times, I keep track of the oil change monitor,
uh-huh.
and they're within 500 miles of when when I'm looking at it, because we put the sticker up there at 10, and so I'm within 500 miles of what when the oil light comes on.
Right.
So it's, our guys have a guest on my truck, and I suppose on yours as well, to figure that out. But nevertheless, that's it. Matt, let's go to Mike. Mike, you're up next. How are you today?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hi, Mike.
Hey,
good.
Yeah, I love your show. Hey, I called you last week. I got a couple different questions on a vehicle here, but my 99 Ford F-250 7.3 diesel was getting the check engine light for like a minute after I'd start it, and then it'd go off and it'd be good the rest of the day. Now, last week we noticed, me and my son, we took the fuel filter off in the middle, you know, where the one that you can change on top of the motor.
Yeah.
We looked at it. We're like, oh man, this doesn't look good. It was really dirty. So do you think we're putting a new filter in it today? Do you think that light could cause the light to go on, or the bad filter cause that light to go on in the fuel system?
Not only for a minute.
Okay.
No. It's not going to be fuel. And here's the deal. I think, let me change your question. Mark, if you were going to drive cross country in this 7.3 and the light came on and stayed on for a second or two and went off, would that bother you? And the answer is no.
What, have you pulled the code? Do you know why it's coming on?
Well, it's like I told Mark last week, I took it to AutoZone, they pulled the code, it came up air. What, they couldn't get a code off it.
So they're having a tough time reading.
I think it's
Mark suggested take it up to a diesel shop and put it on the big scanner.
Yeah, I don't think that typically is the fuel issue. The first thing that came to mind was actually water in fuel. You know, if it's indicating that, and then maybe burning off or giving off that sensor. The other thing is a lot of times when they come on for a little while, and then they go off, it's a voltage issue. Like it takes a little while to build up to voltage, maybe like a bad battery or a weak alternator or something like that. But yeah, I don't, until it gets worse, I wouldn't.
And on the Dodge, the other day, I left all the dome lights on, and when I got in at 9 volts, the thing wouldn't start. I jumped it, and I had a code that set for a voltage problem.
Right.
But I already knew what the situation was. Look, on your 7.3, do you have a bowl that you can drain the water off on?
No.
Below the filter? Okay.
It should be on the back of the filter. There's a little on the back of the fuel filter housing. There's a little
A valve.
Yeah,
there's a valve there where you drain the fuel when you're changing the filter. Yeah, it's there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a water setup. That's a water drain, not a fuel drain.
Well,
but yes.
Hold on. Diesel fuel floats on water. So what that is that's the lowest part of your filter housing, and when you bleed that off. If you bleed fuel, that's good. That means there's no water there. But if you open it up and you put your wife's coffee cup underneath there and you end up with a bunch of water, then that's water. The second thing is look to see if there's two wires going to the fuel filter housing, and that tells you that it's wired for a water light. So the computer can see that there's water because these little probes stick down inside there, and when water touches the two, it turns on the light. So that's what I was going to say was look for the wires on the fuel filter housing, and if you've got wires coming off of it, then you've got a water light. And if you wanted to test it, then you take that wire harness off and take a paper clip and jump those two wires, and the water light should come on. But as far as the code is concerned, I wouldn't worry about the fact that it comes on, and it's not. Let's use the right terminology. AutoZone uses a code reader. Okay? That's like a toothbrush. A scanner is far more sophisticated.
It's like a power washer.
Yeah. So, it's the difference between a garden hose and a power washer. It's the difference between a VW bug and a Corvette. It's just altogether different. But the scanner doesn't give you any more information because you can't read the numbers. You don't know if a 5 is good or a 7.9 is good or a 1.1 is good. You don't know that. So a scanner gives you serial stream data. We're actually looking and talking to the computer, where a code reader just pulls codes, and that's kind of a waste. Anyway, Rob, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, had a question about gas additive. I have a vehicle with approximately 120,000 miles on it, and I've been using the Lucas additive about, every two or three tanks. Is that doing doing anything, or is that just a scam?
Do you want to go with this? Because go ahead.
I mean, do I put fuel additives in my truck? No, I don't. Do I put them in my customers' cars? No, I don't. The only time we ever do, and there is times we do, in to aid in diagnostics, better, worse, or the same, basically. But other than that, no, I don't put any.
It's not a realistic maintenance upkeep situation.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, and he's being really nice. Let me be real clear.
Okay.
The only person that additive, in the absence of symptoms, the only person that additives benefit is the guy who sold them. A lot of folks use additives in their oil, in their gas. They use additives in their refrigeration system. They think their car's going to love them more. And if the car loves you more, then it's not going to break down. So the most important question, and you're talking about a diesel? Are you talking about a...
No. 07 STS.
Okay. All right. Gas and diesel. Now, you're right. If we have an injector problem, and it's an intermittent one, and we're not getting any setting any codes, and we want you to help us, we're going to probably put some Tecron or some kind of an injector cleaner in your tank, and we're going to say to you, we want to know 30 days from now, better, worse, or the same. Now, in 30 days, we may set a code that'll give us guidance, or it'll be bad 24/7, and that'll make it easy to diagnose. But in the interim, it only happens at 3:12 in the afternoon, and it only lasts for 7.5 seconds, or it could be 10:30 in the morning. That's the kind of thing that we're going to use an additive for the engine, an additive for the fuel. That's what we're going to do.
I'll tell you a good example of that. One of my best friends, Matt Carr, just under 200,000 miles, he has a Duramax, which is the expensive injectors, and he had one that was starting to fail.
$850 a piece on the retail side.
Well, yes, but it's the labor, because those are the ones you got to put. Anyway, so I told him just one day, I said, put a quart of training fluid in there. He's got 300,000 on, and we still haven't done the injectors.
And it's a matter of the transmission fluid is going to burn a little bit of white smoke out the tailpipe, but in reality, it's going to clean stuff up, and it's an old wives' tale that actually has come back around, and it also lubricates the injectors a little bit more than normal diesel fuel does.
Right.
So you got all these kinds of stuff. I tell people if they got a transmission leak, then a lot of times a little bit of brake fluid will help. Now, I got a call from Alger the other day, and he goes, you have to tell them to flush it. If it takes care of the leak, then they have to have a transmission service sometime later. And I said, why? And he goes, because the brake fluid will continue to let the O-ring swell.
Gotcha.
But here's the deal. An O-ring is the seal, yes?
Yes.
This is the argument we had, by the way. The O-ring is the seal.
Right. You're good.
And the issue is the O-ring is contained within two pieces of metal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in a groove.
Yeah.
How can it swell any more than it is?
Well, no, I think it would be like how your hands get pruny.
Yeah.
Just like wiggles and jiggles. It looks like a squished grape in there.
Okay. Well, that's your visual. That's a good visual, but that's not what happens to an O-ring inside of a transmission. It's contained. So we're going to make it swell and it's going to stop the leak. But by the same time, it's not going to come out of like those squiggly things that the kids play with.
Right.
All righty. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We're 8 seconds away from taking a break. Mark and Alan Salem, we're here at your service. We'll be here for another hour. 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. The lines are, we got three on the line right now, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call us. Michelle, you're first, and we're going to take ladies first. So, Michelle, how can we help you today?
Hello. So, my daughter has a truck, a 1999 Ford 250 diesel. And when she's driving the truck, it sounds fine. It seems to run fine. But when she takes her foot off the gas, it makes the most horrific, noise. It's really loud and, just wondering, is that like a transmission? She's been told all kinds of different things, that it's a transmission problem. It's, maybe something with the ignition.
All right. It's a diesel though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The question is, I want to tell you, and I'm telling you you can take this to the bank. Nobody can tell you what's the matter with this until they hear it. We have to know if it's under the truck, in front of the truck, is it under the hood, is it at the back of the truck, is it underneath the dash. We would have to drive it. Now, where does your daughter, what geographical area that your daughter live in?
In Carefree, Cave Creek area.
Okay. I don't have anybody in Cave Creek or Carefree. I don't have anybody at all. I don't have anybody in Fountain Hills either. And I have really tried to find somebody there that I could hang my hat on. Does she come into town and work anywhere that I could find a shop close to where she works?
You know what? She sails, so she drives all over.
Okay.
Probably I-17-ish area.
Okay. I-17 in Bell is Kurtz Auto, and just a mile north is Action Auto. And I know Tom at Action Auto, or Kurt, Jeff, or Eric at Kurtz would know exactly what direction to go in. And I know that they would do that for free. And if they don't do it for free, just to listen and take a test drive with her, then tell her to pay the bill and I'll give her the money back after I call them up and call them bad names and stuff like
and
that.
And bust their chops.
Because I can assure you that nobody at Action and nobody at Kurtz is gonna charge her to go drive. She needs to make sure she can make it happen. But after we do that, then we can decide. This could be something very silly. This could be something very bad, but I'm quite sure that any good technician are the two shops I told you about, Deer Valley and I-17, Bell and I-17, they could figure this out.
Okay. Very good. All right. Well, we'll have to take it over there. Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. They've been open since 1985. They're up in the northeast part of Scottsdale, and they're on Raintree, which is just off Hayden. It's just south of Frank Lloyd Wright or Bell. They've been around a long time. Stacy and Nadine opened up Air Park Auto. Stacy passed away, and Nadine still runs the operation. So if you're a lady and you're interested in doing business with a lady-owned and operated, a lady who answers to no man kind of repair shop, then this is a good place for you to go. They do all kinds of work, and they've been on my best car repair shops list in Phoenix for years and years and years. That's Air Park Auto, and it's on Raintree just east of Hayden. Charlie, you're up next. How can we help you today, Charlie?
Hey, thanks for your program, Mark. I've got a 95 F-250 with the 7.3 turbo, and it's all just two-wheel drive. I'm getting lazy in my older years. Is there a product, or is it advisable to put some of those seals on the front hubs where you just put oil in there and not have to worry about repacking the bearings with grease? Is that something that's feasible?
I don't think we've ever done that, have we?
Yeah, I don't.
Those are wet. They're called wet.
But I will point out real quick.
Okay.
Yeah. The last three calls that we've taken have all been Ford F-250s.
Yeah. Oh, so you're going to tease Charlie now. Okay. You're going to throw him underneath the bus because this is the three Fords in a row. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Now, you're doing really good for business. First of all, we work on Ford F-250s and 350s.
We stay in business on F-250s.
Oh, man. No, are you digging a hole? All right. I don't think that the wet bath ones are going to solve your problem, but let me tell you something. I can promise you that if you get a gray-haired guy to repack those wheel bearings and he washes them up good, he cleans out the hub good. Now, on the inside of the hub, between the two bearing races, there's a valley. There's an indention. Us old guys, we fill that up with grease. We're going to use a synthetic grease. We're going to use a grease that handles water. Now, the one I like for this kind of a truck is the red grease, which is a kind of a marine application, but your wheel bearings are fine. Properly cleaned and properly packed, Alan. What would be the life cycle of that? At what mileage would you do it again? Now, Charlie, you think about that, Alan. Charlie, how long have you been going between wheel packs?
Oh, probably about 30,000.
Okay. I have a number in my head. What have you got in your head?
Well, hold on. What are your symptoms? Are you just taking it in just for strictly a wheel pack?
No, sir. I do my own, but I've had a bearing failure, maybe a couple of years ago, and I got to thinking, well, why not be late? Maybe there's an easier way to... Why don't I take a thing apart and do all that?
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. I'm at the 50, 60,000 mile range with respect to wheel packs, but let me give you this. You aren't the first wheel bearing that's gone bad on all kinds of cars and trucks, so we do a lot of those. and here's what we get. The symptom is pretty simple. Let me ask you a question. Which wheel bearing went back on which wheel? Inner, outer, left, or right?
Ooh, I think it was the outer on the left.
Okay, now think about this, okay? All right, think about this. On a right turn, the body's going to lean left. You with me?
Yes, sir.
It's going to load the outside bearing on the driver's side. Now, when you turn left, the body's going to roll to the right, and we're going to take load off that left side bearing. So if you just drive it, and you're doing a sweeping turn off the I-17 on the I-10 or whatever, as you make those sweeping highway turns left and right, this is what will happen. The left outer on a left turn, it'll go, yeah. And as soon as you straighten up, it'll go away. On a right turn, it won't make any noise. But here's the deal. The one outer is the same load as the other inner. So you can actually diagnose which bearing is going bad. But if you bought a good bearing that had like a BCA bearing, that's the name brand of the bearing. If you bought a good bearing and you do it every 50, 60,000 miles and you don't park it in the lake for a night, then I think you'd just be fine. But if you wanted to use those wet bath ones, which are on motorhomes, which are on some really expensive trailers and stuff like that, they have an 80-90 grease. But I can tell you something about those. Number one, if they start shedding metal, you can't see the fluid level. And number two, they're not known for leaks, but it's very likely you'll have a leak. So there is some good and there's some bad. So I think you might be working on the wet bearing kind of thought process. You might be working on that more than you would every 50 or 60,000 miles on your FB50 if you just use a premium synthetic grease and do them every 50 or 60. That's what I would do.
Can I have one more question? Quick.
Sure, right ahead.
Wife's got an 07 Toyota Sienna. And there's a white plastic tank of some sort right directly beneath the battery carrier, and I don't think it's for coolant or anything. I can't determine what that thing's for because the windshield washer tank is on the opposite side of the engine bay, and it's not brake fluid or car steering fluid. Is it? You know what that tank's for?
Well, does it have a hose coming from it?
I couldn't find one.
Okay. I have no idea. I have no idea. But you say it's white, yes?
Yes, it's a white plastic.
Okay, does it have a cap on it?
Not that I could see.
Does it have liquid in it?
Pardon?
Does it have liquid currently in it?
I've got a real good flashlight. It's shined down in there, and I can't see any level of anything. It looks perfectly clean.
Okay. Now, I know your Sienna is going to have an overflow jug. I can guarantee you that. And there's going to be a hose that goes from the neck where the radiator, for the radiator cap is. That hose is going to go. Now, it could go to the bottom of that white container. And if that's the case, I'll tell you how to find out if it's the, do you know where the overflow tank is?
It's in the as you're standing at the front of the car, it's on the left. Edge of the radiator and down maybe 8 or 10 inches from the top of the ledge there. Now you can see it's got red coolant in it. You can even put a flashlight on and tell the level. But it's not the same thing.
Okay, you're right. There's a low and a high mark on that tank. You're going to see red coolant because you have a Toyota. So you're right. The only thing I can think of is this is some kind of a vacuum pod or some kind of an accumulator, but I've never seen one of those on a Toyota Sienna. But what part of town do you live in?
East Mesa.
Okay, well, why don't you just stop by Thompson's on Stapley and Main, just east of Stapley on Main Street. Stop by Thompson's and try not to do it on Monday mornings for Friday afternoons, obviously because we're really busy on Monday mornings and Friday afternoons. But if you stop by, you say to Brian, Mark Salem said there's no way that you're going to know what this white plastic thing is underneath the hood of my Sienna because you're too young. And that's kind of like waving the red flag in front of the bull. And he'll look at it for you for nothing.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
All right. Good luck, Charlie. Thank you very much. Nick, you're up next. How can I help you?
This is going back to the fuel additive.
Yes, sir.
Okay. years ago, I worked at a Toyota dealership. We had three cars. This is back during the transition from carburetor fuel injection, okay? We had three vehicles come in about 2 months. The first one that shows up was a 4Runner with the fuel injection. All the diagnostics check out. Runs rough. It's like a bad idle. I call up Toyota Tech in Denver, and they said they run two or three tank fulls of Chevron Supreme through it. And what was happening with all three of these cars, and the worst, was the carburetor pickup truck had 12,000 miles on it. The only fuel it had ever seen was AMPM, and it had a heavy knock, and all three of them, what it turned out to be, was carbon buildup. And, we hooked up the water to the carburetor vehicle and blew a bunch of junk out the exhaust. And I got an AMPM, a stone's throw from my house, so I quit using it in the car because every time I put it in my truck, I'd have to get out and adjust the timing. But I was using it in my lawnmower equipment. So I'm mowing my lawn one day. I'm riding across with the mower, and all of a sudden the engine quit. I pulled the spark plugs out. There's a chunk of carbon between the center electrode and the ground.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to take a break, and then Alan and I will kind of discuss the issues that you brought up. We're going to explain what the water's all about, and we're going to talk about the carbon, and we're going to talk about different fuel systems, but thank you for chiming in. And then we're going to talk about, some of the experiences we've had with the kinds of issues that you have. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you want to talk cars, give us a call now. Welcome back, everybody. I want to tell you real quick that we've just recently updated our best car repair shop list. You can find that at marksalem.com. I'm telling you that there's lots of good shops in this valley, and I've identified what I believe to be the top shops. And if you go there and look, you'll find one in a geographical area. You can pick transmission, paint and body, mechanical, tires. We have the categories, and then you can click and find out if there's somebody close to you, and that's assuming you don't already have a relationship. But we've updated that, and so you should stop by and make sure that yours is still on there, and or if we have anything newer that might be closer to you. We'll talk real quick about one of those shops, and that shop is called Kurt's Auto. We already talked about him earlier in the show, but he's at I-17 in Bell. There's Kurt that owns it. There's Eric that runs the shop, and he's an ASE master. And then there's Jeff that runs the service side of it, and he's an ASE master. So when you have two of those guys together, then you really have the best of the best. I-17 in Bell, northeast corner, Kurt's Automotive, and they do all kinds of domestics and imports, both gas and diesel. And he doesn't like it when I say this, but you can take your lawn blower or your lawnmower to him, and he'll fix that too. But you probably should call him first. That's Kurt's Automotive. Let's go. Let's talk about Nick real quick. You want to take this first, or you want me to take it?
No, I've been driving a diesel for the last 20 years, so I don't have any experience in this.
In the gasoline additive stuff?
No, I really don't.
All right. First of all, I want to tell you folks that, I don't know, you all know and you all heard that certain people have, they like a particular kind of gas. There's people who only put Chevron in it because it's the very best in the whole wide world. Then there's people that do this and people that do that. Everybody uses a different shampoo. Everybody uses a different toothpaste. But it's not a good idea to disparage the AMPM gasoline, and I'll tell you why that's not. In 1970s, we had a gasoline shortage. And we were bringing, I ran a mobile station, and we were bringing gasoline from the California coast. And so Tankways was the company that was hired to bring 9,000 gallons of gas to the service stations that needed it. When I got my order, he dumped 9,000 gallons of unleaded gasoline into my underground tank that's 12,000 gallons big. And I said, "Is that mobile?" And he goes, "It will be." And he went to the seat of his truck on the passenger side, and he picked out a 5-gallon bucket that was about 2/3 full of a white milky liquid. He got a funnel, and he put it in the same tank he just dumped the gas, and he dumped this 3.5 maybe gallons of white liquid into the tank, and he goes, "Now you have mobile." Now, I've told that story many times, and I can't tell you how many times that people I respect and people who would know have called me and said, "That is the truth." So there's very little difference between the gasolines you buy except for price. Everybody thinks Chevron's the best, but I don't use it. I don't demand my employees use it in my cars, our gasoline-powered cars. And now we move to the carbon issue. And I think that there was a relationship trying to be made between carbon and AMPM gasoline.
Right.
That can't be the truth for a variety of reasons, because carbon is a byproduct of incomplete combustion of the fuel. So you have a gallon's worth of fuel in your engine and you only burned half of it. So the byproduct of that is going to be carbon. So that's a byproduct of something that's not running properly, or it's running too rich. So if you're dumping too much fuel, then the explosion is not going to consume all the fuel you gave it, like the lawnmower. So the lawnmower can have a plugged up air filter causing it to run rich. The lawnmower can has contaminated engine oil because it hasn't had an oil change in 100 years. That'll cause it to run rich. So there's lots of those kinds of things. While I appreciate Nick's experience, I haven't seen any car get fixed by dumping something into the tank. We use it, and we said before, we use it for a diagnostic procedure. Did it make it better? Is it worse? Or is it the same?
Now, one thing I will say, and I think you would agree with this, is that you do want to use heavily trafficked gas stations.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want to try to steer clear of a gas station that is not, that doesn't have a lot of turnover. You want fresh fuel. You don't want fuel that's been sitting in there for months and months and months.
And you're going to go through a small town, right. And there's not going to be anybody at the pumps. So you're going to stop and eat, and as you drive by again, there's still nobody at the pumps. You wouldn't want to take 40 gallons of his fuel on. Okay, you might take 10 and mix it with your half a tank. There's not going to be a problem, but you don't want to walk in there with an empty tank and take 20 gallons of his fuel on, because the risk is there. It doesn't, that we're not guaranteeing that's going to happen, but now if he has 12,000 gallon tanks, he might go 2 months without having to add to those fuel. But the older, smaller stations in those smaller communities typically have much smaller tanks. So they might have 4,000 or 5,000 gallon tanks. He'll run through that in a short period of time. He's not going to have the 12,000 that we had and some of the other guys that have even bigger than that. So it's still an issue that we still hear every day of our lives, or at least every week of our lives. We hear that Chevron gas is the best and Techron is the best and all that other kind of stuff. I don't hunt down Chevron, but I tell you what, we have used Techron to diagnose problems.
Yes.
We'll use a Techron additive in the fuel, which will help us diagnose certain problems. So I am a fan of the Techron, but for the diagnostic purposes, not to make your motor love you or last longer. That's kind of how it works. Chris, you're up next. Chris, how can I help you today?
Well, you know, it occurred to me you guys were a real tag team. And sometimes you have to take what you say with a little bit of salt, because if I did with my wife's coffee cup what you suggested, I would be dead. you can't get diesels out of anything, man. It's contaminated.
Oh, that
forever.
Is true.
You know, well, this goes back.
I filled my truck up on the way up here, and my hands still smell like diesel.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't spill it on your clothes or your shoes. Throw the shoes away.
But
anyway, when my brother and my brother-in-law came back from Vietnam. My brother-in-law did 3 tours. He was a helicopter pilot, 39 months. My brother came back as soon as he could. And they both went out and they bought new cars. As soon as they got here, they both bought Camaros, okay? And okay. I think it was 1971 Camaro. It wasn't the little baby one. It was the first model that was sort of like a stretched-out version.
Okay.
And they both had 327s. And I was working part-time at a gas station. And, you know, my brother-in-law, Tim, said, "Hey, take my car in and change the oil for me." And I said, "Okay." He said, "The engine's ticking. There's something wrong with it." "Oh, okay." I took it in, changed the oil. Tick didn't go away. Tick got a little worse. So I asked the owner of the station. I said, "Why did this happen?" He said, "Damn if I know." So I got really nervous because I think, "Oh, geez, I've wrecked this engine." And so what I did was I decided to flush his engine. Apparently, one of the listers or two had gotten some dirt in them, and they were either draining out all the way or something, because if it was run a little while, maybe 3 or 4 miles, that tick would go away. So flushing it, we didn't have engine flush, so I just used diesel fuel and just let it idle. The tick went away, changed the oil, and it was as good as new. That was the simplest thing
right.
I ever did, you know.
Okay, You're right. That is exactly what we did in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. But when we come back, because I'm up against a break here, when we come back, we're going to talk about the risk and reward associated with that. Today, lots of guys will use diesel fuel to flush out an engine that's got a tremendous amount of sludge. The reward is big. The risk is 10 times bigger than the reward. So that's what we'll talk about. But when we extrapolate this back to the early 70s, then we did that successfully, and the reward was big and the risk was small. So we'll just talk about the difference when we come back. And Joe, you stay right there. I'm going to grab you just as soon as we talk about this. Welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We've got some open lines available if you're interested. 602-508-0960. If you have a comment, a question, or if you want to discuss something, then we're more than happy to do that. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Phoenix area since 1968. As a matter of fact, he's been at 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the street since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good with transmissions. They're going to treat you fairly. And what they do that a lot of the other transmission shops on my list do is they'll drive your car and listen to the noise you have. You have to be able to make it happen, because you can't just put a technician in somebody's car and take him for 2 hours while this intermittent problem applies, because that's just not feasible. However, if you've got a problem that you can make it happen and you think it's transmission related, then take it by Automatic Transmission Exchange if you're in the Phoenix area. Here's why. Because they can tell you it is transmission related, but they're also good enough to say, no, this is an engine related problem. This is an axle related problem. This is a broken flywheel related problem. So they're really good at noises, as all transmission guys should be. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Let's talk about Chris here for just a second. Chris was talking about in the 70s that he did a diesel fuel flush. Yes, we used to do that in the 70s. Between 70 and about 1985 to 1996, we were running our cooling systems real cold. So every time you turn your car on and run it and you shut it off, it creates about a tablespoon of water. Well, with a 180-degree thermostat, we never, ever really boiled the oil and got it up over 212. So therefore, oil and water equals sludge. So we had a tremendous sludge problem from the 50s until we started going into some semblance of computer cars, which is 85, 86. We had an electronically operated carburetors. And then in 1996, we went into full OBD, onboard diagnostics, and we went to fuel injections pretty much 100%. And that's when the sludge stopped. It stopped almost overnight. It stopped. The diesel fuel flush, if you've got an old car, this is a messy proposition. You need to know that. You drain the oil out of it, and if you hold 5 quarts, you put 15 quarts of diesel fuel in it, because we want to raise the level in the oil pan up to where the crankshaft is going to agitate that. So you're going to start the motor, and you're going to run it for maybe 3 or 4 minutes, shut it off, start it back up, run it at a little higher RPM. Then you're going to pull the drain plug, and you're going to see some nasty stuff come out, but you're going to have to do it until it stops coming out. Now, you're going to have to change your oil filter, and you always run a risk of getting some big, huge piece of jello in there, plugged up your oil filter screen, which is the suction part of your oil pump. And, of course, at that point, you have to pull the oil pan off anyway. So there's a risk and reward associated with that. The risk is huge. The reward is kind of small. But that was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. This diesel fuel engine flush is not applicable from 85 and north of that. So it's not something that you should do. It's something we did back then. We were successful 50% of the time, but the customer was told this: your engine's full of sludge. We're going to try this diesel fuel flush first. It may not work. And if it doesn't work, then we still have to pull your oil pan off and your valve covers off and clean everything up. So we still have to do that. So that's kind of the comment about that. Yes, that's what we do, but I don't want to give the idea that you guys need to do that, because that's going to be a bad idea, especially if you have a car that's kind of north of 85, and for sure if you have a car that's north of 96, you don't want to be doing that. Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I bought a Volkswagen Beetle 2004 with 104,000 miles on it, and it idles. I can see the steering wheel vibrating on idle, and so eventually the check engine light came on, and the code was lean on idle. And so I took it in, and they smoked the vacuum lines, and they repaired that and reset the light. We got the vehicle back, but it still, it seems like it idles a little rougher than it should.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you what I want you to do, and you can go do it now and call me back. I want you to sit inside the car, and I want you to close your eyes, and I want the car idling. And then I want you to go to reverse, and then neutral, and then drive. Keep your eyes closed and pay attention to the vibration on the car. From there, I want you to go back up. You're in drive. Now I want you to go to neutral. Now I want you to go to reverse, and now I want you to go to park. And I want to know something very simple from you. As you do all these gyrations, as you go in and out all these gears, I want to know if the vibration at the steering wheel or the vibration on the bottom of your feet on the floorboard, if it changes. That's what I want to know.
All
right. All right. If you want to do that, call me back. Let's do it. Okay?
He just gave you that entire explanation with his eyes closed too.
It was hilarious.
I don't have you here to make fun of me.
Listen,
okay.
Listen, right? You were telling him to close his eyes. You didn't need to close your eyes the whole time while you did that.
Oh, all right. Well, let me ask you something, Mr. Smarty Pants. Why did I tell him to do that?
Because you're looking at injured mouse.
I spotted you that answer. That's no, why. So anyway, what we're looking at, and he's right, we're looking at engine mounts here, and if this vibration changes as he goes through those gyrations I ask him to, then we got a motor mount problem. The reason I close my eyes is because I forget this isn't TV, okay? But you're right, I did have, because the reason I want him to do is I want him to concentrate, okay? He might be in his VW bug, okay? In his VW. And he might be sitting there, and the lady next door is 22 years old, and she's mowing the grass. Okay? So I want him to close his eyes and concentrate on what I'm telling him to do.
I understand.
I don't want him to watch
it. I understand. You just didn't need to close your eyes and shift the gears as you're sitting here.
All right. Oh, you're going to pay big time for that. All righty. When we come back, we're going to take your call, 602-508-0960, and I may be flying this plane by myself. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is a man by the name of Alan Salem. It's 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. S&S Tire Service serves the West Valley. I think S&S is probably one of the best tire shops, and I'll tell you why. First of all, they service Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. That's the west side. But they have a comprehensive line of tires, so you can take your car in there, and they will say to you, what is it you're interested in? And you say, well, I'm interested in this. And they say, fine. And they're capable of giving you three different out-the-door tire prices. So here's the good, here's the better, and here's the best. And here's the warranty, and here's all the stuff you need to know. And here's what they look like. So they have the uncanny ability with their huge warehouses to be able to show you three different brands of tires at three different pricing levels. And I think that's a pretty nice idea. You're not likely to get that at other stores because they have a sign outside that says the tire that they sell. So they're not likely to sell lots of other tires. So if you need tires on the west side, you have nothing to lose but maybe 20 minutes worth of time to stop by S&S Tire and Auto Service. Now, not only do they mount and balance tires, but they do all the related stuff. So they do alignments and suspension work as well. So if you have an abnormal wear pattern, they can identify it and offer you an estimate to repair it as well. All righty. Do we have Joe still on the Beetle?
Joe had to go. His daughter took his car, so he couldn't do the transmission thing that you want him to do. He did promise to call all next right. week to find out what happened.
All righty. All right. What are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing at that visual that I keep getting. You leaning back in your chair, eyes closed, lean back, head on the chair, shifting through the gears with your right hand, like you're sitting there doing it.
Yeah.
And it just cracks me up.
Okay. All right. Well, you know that radio, they can't see us, right? So yeah. It doesn't make any difference. But let me just draw the distinction.
I'm glad they can't see us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're in your underwear.
You know, there's 22 years difference between the two of us. And let me just describe something that just jumps out at me while you're sitting here busting my
butt.
Yeah. Okay. I have a, a 200-year-old Seiko watch that I just bought a brand new gold band at Walmart.
Okay.
Okay. You got a watch on your arm that looks like it's 19-inch color TV screen.
No.
Oh, just a minute. I get to talk now. And it does everything in the world but wake you up in the morning, and it probably does that. It's got a camouflage band on it, and you don't even hunt. You've never been on a hunt in your whole life. And this watch is bigger than anything I've ever seen.
That's not true.
Everything I just said was true.
No.
Does it have a camo band?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have a television screen on it?
No. No, it doesn't.
What does it do?
Nothing. It's temperature and altitude and time. But we're up in the forest, so I had put a camo thing on just in case.
In case what? You're attacked by elk?
In case I have to run out and hide.
So you think the camouflage watch band is beneficial when you come up to the mountains?
No, it's okay. Not beneficial.
It's just an emergency.
That's right.
If a cow elk...
I'm wearing blue shorts and a camel watch band, so...
I want to tell you something. There's lots of cows out there in the meadow, okay? But there's a big 7-point bull out there. So when he's out there, you stay away from the cows. But if you go out there and the cows start chasing you, I'm quite sure they're not going to care that you have a camel band on your watch.
They're not going to see me.
And you won't be able to outrun them with those funky thongs that you wear either.
Right.
I can tell you that much.
That's right.
All right. So now that we got the generation gap and you can stop busting my butt, let's go to Bob. Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
I've got a 2002 F-150 with a Triton V8 with like 85,000 miles on it. And I was thinking about having spark plug changed before 100,000. And I was wanting, I know that there's trouble with the aluminum head with the spark plugs, and so I'm not going to do it. So I need to take it to someone, and I was curious what that would cost roughly to have the spark plugs changed. And... is it really worth doing it prior to 100,000 miles because the vehicle's running?
We're both shaking our heads. Yes, we wish. I can tell you what, I know hundreds of Triton Motor people that paid big bucks to have their spark plug holes rethreaded because they waited to 125,000 miles. So let me explain what's going on here, okay? I want you to picture that the spark plug goes into the hole, but it goes a tad too far, and the last circle of thread is actually inside the combustion chamber, okay?
Yep.
As we develop a small amount of carbon, there's a ring of black carbon that embeds itself in the very end of the spark plug. So when you start bringing it out, you're trying to bring that ring of carbon that's rock hard, and you're trying to have the threads become a die, and they're going to try to cut threads in that, and it ain't going to work. So whoever does them, at 75,000 miles, I doubt if you're going to have that problem.
Well, it's 85,000.
85,000. But what bothers me is it's an 02, so that's 15 years old. So I don't know if you – and 85,000 over 15 miles doesn't mean that – it's not like you're driving this to Denver once a month.
Oh, yeah.
It's, so I'm a little concerned about the small amount of mileage based on the monthly of 85,000 versus 15 years. So, I think it's a great idea to do it early. As far as cost is concerned, I'm thinking 200, give or take.
No, it's gonna be more than that.
Okay.
I want to say it's, and I know you always talk dollars, but I know it's about 3 hours, and it's probably $10 a plug.
Okay. Or more.
Or more. 10 to 15 bucks a plug.
So if you're talking, $200 or $300 worth of labor. Now, here's where it gets ugly. If we find out that the spark plug's not going to come out easy, then your car's going to spend a couple of days with us. And here's what we do. Here's what our industry does. We're going to back out the spark plug as much as we can, and we're going to feed that cavity with some transmission fluid. And we're going to let it soak. Now, the transmission fluid is going to run down the threads that we've loosened up, and it's going to go and soak that band of carbon around the end of the spark plug. And then we're going to work it in, work it out, work it in, work it out. And it's manual. We don't use any air tools on this kind of thing. And ultimately, we're going to be able to soften that up enough to where we can bring your spark plugs out.
That's why I'm under the best.
Well, and that's, I'm glad you said that. Because this isn't for the faint of heart.
That's right.
And if you put an air gun on those and you start bringing those spark plugs out, we can rethread those spark plugs. But you're going to spend $800 to $1,000 while we have to vacuum out the cylinders. And it's just a long process to rethread those spark plug holes, and it's not easy.
Is there anything that you can run through the fuel to decarbon those?
No. what you need to do is, do you have a grandson?
Yeah.
You have a 16-year-old grandson? I'd let him take this on a couple of dates because he's going to run the hell out of it, and he's going to bring up the RPMs. And, of course, you have a computer that won't let him over-rev the motor. But the truck needs to be worked hard every once in a while. And if it's a Sunday morning and you're on your way to Walmart or Price Club with your buddies to drink coffee, here's the deal. You look around, there's nobody there. You're on the on-ramp. You stuff that throttle to the floor and you just kick it as hard as you can until you hit a lot of RPMs and a lot of miles per hour at the end of the ramp. Now you look in the rearview mirror. If you just lay down a cloud that James Bond would be proud of, then you need to do that on a more regular basis.
Yeah.
And that's what, I gotta tell you, Bob, there are times, single widow ladies will bring their car in and we will go decarbonize the car. Now there's a small amount of risk in there that you're gonna hurt something. But in fact, I have driven those kinds of cars and really it's embarrassing when you're on the on-ramp of a freeway and you throttle it down to the floor and everybody behind you starts turning on their headlights because they can't see for the cloud you just laid down. So, you know, I'd probably run a little harder. Don't be afraid. Like I said, you're on the on-ramp. Nobody's behind you. Nobody's in front of you. Just nail it, and then by the time you get to the on-ramp and you start merging, you ought to be 65, 70 miles an hour.
So, oh, but how many times do you think I need to do this?
Well, I think you do it to just look behind you and see what kind of a cloud, James Bond cloud you laid down.
And then
I would think that you do that probably every 3, 4, 5, 6,000 miles.
Yeah.
Just throttle it up hard.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid. It's kind of like a horse behind a wagon. You know, you don't want him to walk along and spend his whole life walking. Every once in a while you want to get him into a trot, and every once in a while you want to get him into a dead run and get that blood circulating. So I need to rattle that motor. When you throttle it all the way to the floor and the RPMs pop up, that motor's vibrating and a lot of good stuff is happening. So that's what I would do. Okay.
Got it. Thank you so much,
right,
sir.
What part? You bet. What part of town do you live in?
Tempe.
Well, you just bring it by over our shop, and Alan will drive it for you for free.
What about dropping it off? You know.
No, you. We can do what you're talking about. What I was just talking about. We work really hard in making sure that we're not going to bring the threads out with the spark plugs. Now, every once in a while, you'll get 7 out, and the 8th one will be bad, or you'll get 6 out,
yeah.
Two of them are going to be bad.
Right.
But at 75,000 miles, I'm pretty comfortable. I'm 80% sure all you're going to pay for is the labor to get them out and the new spark plugs put in. And we're typically going to follow the path of the old ones we took out. We may not follow the brand, but we're going to follow the path. So if it's a double platinum, I'm putting a double platinum back in.
Yeah. Got it.
All righty?
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Have a good...
Thank you, Bob.
Same hey, when was the last time the Price Club was in business?
You know,
I didn't even hear anything after the word Price Club. I'm thinking to myself, this has been 25 years.
You know, your mom says that to me all the time, too. You know, it's just ingrained in my head.
I know.
It's just ingrained. It's Costco.
It's Costco now. Yeah, I remember when it used to be Price Club.
Yeah, how old were you?
I was probably under 5.
Yeah,
I would say we're under 10.
Yeah, somebody's going to look it up on their smartphone and call me and let me know that it isn't as long as you. I don't know how long it went from Price or Costco or Price Club to Costco, but it hasn't been 20 years.
Oh, I bet it has.
Okay, well, you just grab your... And why don't you use that wristwatch that has 47 channels to it? And does that wristwatch tell you when you have to go to the bathroom?
No.
Buy that at it, Price Club. All righty. Anyway, Gil, we got anybody on the line? No problem. Well, while the lines are open, let me tell you about Action Auto Repair. Early in the show, there was somebody who was in the I-17 corridor, and I talked about two repair shops. Let me talk specifically about Action Auto, which is up at Deer Valley and I-17 on the northwest corner. Tom's a good guy, and I've known Tom since the mid-70s. Tom and I met when he was selling what we called a scope back then. But what was really important is he could make the scope dance. He had enough technical ability to demonstrate the skill level, to demonstrate this scope's ability using his skill level. And so now he owns his own shop, and he's been around for a very long time. I think he started in 1983. So he's a good guy. He knows his stuff, and we don't use big box scopes anymore. You remember when you used to take it in and say, I want you to scope my car? Well, that's then. Today we don't have that. We have scanners. So, but Tom's a good guy. He's honest and he's dependable, and especially if you're a fisherman, because Tom is a world-class fisherman. I think once a month he goes to Wisconsin to go fishing, and the fish he catches, he says, belong on a 40-foot trailer behind a semi-truck when he brings them home, and he can feed his whole neighborhood. And that's the story that fishermen always tell.
1997 was the last time Price Club's in business. Mom is cracking up. I know.
That's okay. Let me explain something to you here, okay? I just do this, and you're gone. Okay? So you guys can laugh all you want and tease me about Costco and Price Club, but no one can hear you because I've turned your mics off. So I just want to let you know, my family has been in a lot of car wrecks, and so there's lots of head damage associated with my family, especially my oldest son who's sitting here next to me. So you have to be cognizant of that stuff, your only son and my oldest son. Nevertheless, Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a car question, I'll see you next week. Thank you for spending your time with us.